welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to April Salim, who has just defended her Master of Science in Pathology and Molecular Medicine, which she did under the supervision of Dr. Pramit Sheth. Welcome to Grad Chat, April, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me here today, Colette.
Now, I know you've actually already started your PhD, correct?
Yes, I have at McMaster.
Okay, so why did you go from doing your master's here on to then going to McMaster? And McMaster is a very good school, don't get me wrong there. but what was the connection for you to go to McMaster?
Yeah, of course. So actually during my master's at Queen's, I had a semester or so where I was a visiting graduate student at McMaster's. And during that time, I got to know the facility very well, the people of the lab very well, and the opportunity to do a PhD had come up. And that's where I naturally transitioned to. It took a lot of thinking, though. I don't know if a PhD is something that comes to everyone's mind immediately after a master's, but believe me, it was definitely a hard decision to make at the time. So, but I'm happy where I am. So.
Well, you know what? And that's the important thing. I mean, it can be daunting, I would imagine, going on to do a PhD. Now you've got at least another 4 years of study to do. But also, I imagine it depends on your area of research, right? I mean, if it's something you're really getting into and you want to continue, because a master's is not very long to do a lot.
Yeah.
You're just starting bits and pieces, and I would imagine it must be hard to suddenly just leave it and not either continue it or go on to a slightly different tangent of the concept that you were looking at to start with.
Yeah, actually, I think I'm fortunate in that way that my project I was working on in my master's is continued throughout my PhD. So obviously, I'll be diving a little bit more into other areas of it, but very much the same topic. And I'm really glad that that's the case. So I get to build on it in the next few years.
Well, talking about building on it, just for everyone's information, I first got to hear about April's work last year in our 3-minute thesis competition, which, as you all know, is one of my favorite events on campus, but it is not an easy task for our students to do. So, April, how did you find doing the 3-minute thesis?
To be honest with you, I was very, very nervous. I had not done anything like that. And typically when I do presentations, they're, you know, the biggest stressful thing on my mind. And so I saw that as an opportunity to really put myself in a position where I'm only up there for 3 minutes. I'm delivering a talk about something that I know very well and I'm very happy to share about. And I think the overall experience, I would definitely recommend. I have not spoken enough about 3MT to my lab at that time enough, but I was just gushing about how it was really a unique experience for all graduate students to go through. Being able to distill your research into just 3 minutes and then be able to, you know, enthusiastically tell an audience that has no prior knowledge to it and then seeing how they react. I really, incredible opportunity, incredible experience, Colette, really is.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, I know this year at Queen's, we're going to hold our first GradFlix event, and McMaster hold theirs or have been holding theirs for at least 1 year, if not two, doing GradFlix, which is a 1-minute video. So you may want to consider doing that as well.
Yeah, that's something to think about.
So on that, though, let's get into your work, because this is why we're here today. Your research topic was investigating the role of the gut microbiota in depressive disorders.
Yes.
Before you get into that, what made you want to go into looking at the microbiota in guts and then the relationship with depressive disorders? What made you want to choose that in the first place?
Yeah, great question. So I had started my master's around mid-pandemic, I believe. And at that time, I knew around me, everyone, my friends, my family, everyone was experiencing some level of social isolation. And that obviously had an impact on everyone's mental health. So right. From the get-go, mental health has been always top of mind. Like, it's important for everyone to be aware of just the things that may affect that. And that includes, you know, your ability to socialize with your friends, to go out, to want to exercise or have, you know, meals with your family. It affects everyone on so many different levels. And I thought that that was truly such an important topic. And so when this opportunity came up to, you know, study this very specific research, I was absolutely on board. And so that really speaks to the piece about mental health. But this whole gut microbiota more recently has been coming up as a very critical intersection of our gut-brain axis that really works to modulate our mood, our memory, our behavior. So many of our physiological aspects are modulated by the microbes in our digestive tract. And previously, we may have had some knowledge of this, but I think in the past 2 decades or so, we've really dove into what exactly is going on there? How exactly are fellow microbes impacting all our other processes in our body?
It's interesting you say that, because usually when we have a gut problem, people just think, oh, we're just not eating properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't necessarily always look at the whole. So this intersection with the gut and the mental side or the brain side,
yeah,
is an interesting one, because the brain tells us a lot of things to do or tries to.
Oh yeah. They actually say, like, I read this a lot, that the gut is actually as our second brain. So we've got 2, you know, controlling processes here. So right. They work together.
Well, that's good, as long as they do work together.
Yes.
So give us a bit of an overview about what you are trying to do here.
Yes.
And why bring in the word depressive disorders?
Yeah. So my project looks obviously at the gut-brain axis, and the samples that I was working with throughout my master's and now subsequently into my PhD were fecal samples collected from a clinical trial that was completed not too long ago that was investigating the gut microbiota of patients diagnosed with bipolar disorder who had undergone fecal microbiota transplantation. And so fecal microbiota transplantation is essentially when you take a donor microbiome via stool,
right,
and you purify it, you process it, and then you put it into, essentially you transplant it into a recipient through any other means.
That sounds disgusting.
Yeah, you can take it orally, you can take it colonically. And
through the colon.
Yeah, through the colon. And essentially, the idea is that the microbiome from the donor, assuming that they are healthy all around, is also transplanted to the recipient, where the recipient, prior to the fecal microbiota transplantation, or FMT, I'll call it from now, they would have a bowel prep. So the idea is to cleanse the distal colon so that the new microbiota is able to take hold and colonize that new area and then
Okay, so let's get some definitions sorted here to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yes.
What is a microbiota?
Your microbiota, or a human microbiota, is all the microbes found in and on your body. So you've got microbiota literally anywhere you can think of, in your hair, in your nose, obviously in your mouth, down your GI tract, on your skin, even everywhere. Your microbes and you live in this harmonious, hopefully, relationship with each other. And so in the lab, you can take pretty much any swab on your skin, your sputum, anything, and you can actually see microbes, different microbes, grow. And so our gut microbiota happens to be one of the areas of our body that has the highest amount of diverse bacteria. And I think that is what draws me most to my research as well, is because there is, like, I would compare it to, like, you know how we don't know how many different species are in the ocean? I would almost say, like, we don't know what exactly are all the bacteria in our gut. I think at this point, we have most of them sequenced and attached to some form of identifier, but those are just identifiers. We don't really know truly all of the species that are there.
So what's the purpose?
What's the purpose
of the microbiota? Even though you just said there's lots of different ones, I mean, yeah. What's the general purpose of having these microbes and bacteria inside our gut?
Absolutely. So there are pathogenic and there are commensal bacteria. Pathogenic bacteria are those that do harm to your body in high doses or high amounts or high abundance. They cause inflammation, illnesses, diseases, disorders. Commensal bacteria are those that work in unison with our body. They are there to have some sort of benefit to the host, the us. Okay. And so the beneficial bacteria, the commensal bacteria, they're able to digest our foods. They're able to metabolize drugs and medication that we take. They're integral in how our immune system is educated at early age and throughout our lifetime. And so you often hear things like antibiotics would kill maybe up to half of our bacteria in our gut, regardless of pathogenic or commensal. Antibiotics, that's their purpose. They're supposed to knock out some of those microbes in our body. And right. So we're interested in particular into those commensal bacteria that have some sort of therapeutic interest or therapeutic benefit or quality. And so that is really where my project comes in.
So how do the bacteria in our gut, and I'm assuming these are the good ones, or maybe the bad ones, interact with the central nervous system?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, there's the gut-brain axis, and that really works through the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is the It's this really nice complex system that our body has to be able to manage our stress levels, our cortisol levels, which affects our mood. And essentially, that acts as a highway. I would suppose it's a two-way highway or a bidirectional relationship with our gut and our brain, where our bacteria in our gut produce metabolites such as short-chain fatty acids, and those get absorbed throughout our body, and they essentially send these signals up and down this highway to our brain, which indicate to our brain, you know, which receptors should be turned on, which receptors should it interact with, and how it should work. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you're hoping that the messages going to the brain are good messages as opposed to, oh my God, something's going wrong?
Yeah. There's just all these messages, external signals that you're receiving from your environment, from inside of you. And so when you have good bacteria in your body, in your gut, they are producing more of the good short-chain fatty acids that we're looking for, such as butyrate, which is when we're looking for bacteria, this one particular short-chain fatty acid is what we've been focusing on. So some bacteria produce butyrate, some bacteria produce acetate as a metabolite after they've taken your food that you can't digest and then break it up. And that is essentially what we're looking for, is what abundance of which bacteria are in the gut of healthy individuals when you compare them to individuals that are diagnosed with bipolar disorder or major depressive disorder.
Can you just explain a little bit more on that in terms of, are the bacteria that we have identified or you've identified now that have shown any beneficial impact? Because I think that's going to be important, right? Because as you said, there's a lot going on in there, and it's not just a matter of eating more yogurt and getting your probiotics from yogurt. There's much more to it than that.
Absolutely. So that's where this clinical trial comes in. At this point, I would say we know a good amount of the bacteria, who's in our gut. We know a little bit about what they're doing. And we also have some idea of how important it is the different abundance of different bacteria there are have an effect. And so previous studies have shown, especially studies that look at bacterial infections or chronic bacterial infections causing severe diarrhea, those studies have seen that there is a disproportionate amount of bacteria in those that are suffering from chronic diarrhea versus just healthy individuals, those who have no free of disease and disorders. And so the clinical trial that I had been working with the samples with, they were looking at a difference between the bacteria that were in those who are diagnosed with depression before and after they had gone through fecal microbiota transplantation.
Okay.
And so the idea is one group had been given their own stool as the FMT, And the other group was given a healthy donor stool. And so after we had gone through the trial, we had collected stool at different time points before and after treatment. We would look at the abundance of bacteria and try to see if there is even a difference between them. If there is any key bacterial species that stood out as, you know, enriched in one group and not enriched in the other group, or enriched at the start of the study and then not enriched at the end of the study. Seeing, or vice versa, whether or not they were not present before and present afterwards. Right. And just looking specifically at those, seeing like sort of if we had a big target at the start of the study, the whole point of it was to really narrow down what exactly we want to look at. And then from there, being able to, I suppose, cherry pick the bacteria and do a lot more assays to understand what exactly they're doing.
Not easy, because even if you are testing those that have got gut problems and those are supposedly healthy, I mean, even genetics and things have to come into this, right? Because some people are healthy but eat rubbish food.
Yes.
They seem healthy, but they eat rubbish food and they've just got good genes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the usual thing that people say, and it's really annoying when you see those people. But I mean, how do you standardize this? Because it's not easy because there are so many variables.
Yeah.
So even choosing a healthy person and one that's not, it's not as simple as that.
That's absolutely a great question. And that is the purpose of the clinical trial, is where almost every parameter is controlled for. And so the healthy donors that are accepted into the trial, they have a long list of inclusion and exclusion criteria that they must have had in order to have been admitted. So there's something like, you know, you couldn't have traveled in the past 6 months or taken any antibiotics in the past 6 months, and no family history of any other diseases and disorders. Like, the list just is so extensive. And I think that is one of the main challenges that we see with microbiome research, is finding healthy donors or donors that are free of the specific disorder that we're trying to study to be able to measure as a baseline when comparing against the participants.
Yeah. So you could be left with very few.
Absolutely.
For your trial.
Yeah. But I mean, those very few, I would really like to know what their lifestyle is.
Me too. We can bottle that one. Sell that on the market. Ta-da.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. And then vice versa, those on the other side that do have some problems. I mean, how do you fine tune that to say it's this that is causing the problem, not that, other things?
Yeah, that actually touches on also one of the other issues on the other side of this research field, is every individual is so unique. They're like, not just personality and characteristics wise, but your gut microbiome from one person to another is so variable. There are so many different factors, as you mentioned, your genetics, your environment growing up, your lifestyle, the way that you exercise and eat, your sleep cycle, the way that you have your light day rhythm. Everything impacts your gut, which makes it very difficult to even say like one particular disease or disorder has a specific set of pattern in their microbe abundance. That is so difficult to be able to pin down, because everyone's microbiome is so unique to them. And it's not even like your geographic region also plays a huge role. The food types that you're able to purchase at the supermarket, whether you live in Canada or in Europe, is so variable. And also the food industry, being able to approve certain items or have certain things available, that also impacts populations of microbiomes. So it is hard to narrow down and say exactly, you know, this population has this type of bacteria. You'd have to really generalize it. Right. And one of the things that is, I suppose, nice about bacteria and most animals, I guess, is their nomenclature. So there's a really nice taxonomic classification system, and the acronym that I use for it, or that's been told to me, is kings play chess on funny green squares. So you start with king's kingdom plays phylum, plays chess. Class, kings play chess on order. Family, genus, species. Sorry, I'm not talking about the higher up levels, but we do talk about genus, species quite a bit. And so when you look at microbiome studies, the broad population studies, we're looking at, you know, which family of species are taking up different proportions in different populations.
Right.
And that gives you a really good idea of, within this family, you know, there are these different genera, and the different genera, they all typically have the same function. Or, I mean, that's right. A little too broad to say, but then you go down to the species level and, you know, these individuals in this species or these members of this species, they are all butyrate producers, or they are all propionate producers, and they do different things. And so that gives a little bit more insight into the proportion and abundance of bacteria in our gut.
So ultimately then, I'm assuming what you're trying to do is figure out is these particular bacteria are causing this problem, in this case, bipolar disorder. Yes?
Yes, yes. And major depressive disorder.
And major depressive, yeah.
The depression aspect of both those disorders are very similar, classified by the Diagnostic Statistics Manual, which is the manual that physicians would use to diagnose bipolar disorder or major depressive disorder.
So if you figure out which of the bacteria are making this worse, what are you doing next? Is your project just to find out it's this bacteria or this clump of these sorts of bacteria that are causing it? And then are you doing the next step of this? So how do we get rid of those, the baddies?
Yeah. So that is a good counter component to my project. So you've actually outlined the opposite of what I'm doing. So I do know that there are many researchers out there that are looking at those specific bacteria that are increased in those that are diagnosed with depression or some disorder, and seeing how you can eliminate those. So my project is just the opposite of that, where I'm looking at those that are found to be beneficial, and how can we increase those in these specific individuals?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So the long-term plan, I suppose, is to really hone in on which individuals are having those key beneficial features.
Right.
And then hopefully also placing them into a community and seeing if they will play nice with each other, and going through the process of creating a live biotherapeutic and then testing that in individuals in a clinical trial again. So that we know that it is effective and safe for use. So this is a very long-term plan, but that is the overall goal that I'm trying to get to with my research, which is which bacteria do we want on our star team? Like who are the like best members that we can figure out from this?
Because when you think about anything in our bodies, it's always a balance.
Yes.
If you had in the back of the mind, well, if we play too much on the goodies, like trying to get more of the good bacteria, does that upset upset the balance of the body or the guts? Because you got too many good ones versus, because sometimes you still need a few of the baddies, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
Yeah.
Maybe not as many as we've got.
Yeah.
But when do you know how much is enough?
That is honestly such an interesting question. There must be a balance in your gut microbes. And like you said, the amount of, I wouldn't yet call them pathogenic. Maybe commensal is a pretty good term to classify those that are maybe at the time not a benefit, but also not being pathogenic. Right. But those bacteria where they take up space in your body, they may or may not be able to contribute to breaking down your nutrients and digesting drugs and other medicine and medication, but they're taking up resident and they're not causing any issues. But they're also not doing anything beneficial until they need to.
Until they need to.
So that is a great question. And I think it comes down to how variable everyone's microbiome is that we can't pinpoint. There is no
magic balancing number.
Yeah. And there's no standard for what a healthy microbiome looks like. There's no saying, you know, these specific species in your gut, if you have just these ones, you're set. There's at least not that I know of, there's no standard of what a healthy microbiome is, aside from other characteristics that we can, you know, tick off in an exclusion inclusion criteria. You know, that I, as far as I know, is the best that we can do to determine what a, you know, not a disease-free microbiome looks like.
Can I ask another question?
Absolutely.
They've got this axis, right? So from the gut to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening at the brain side?
Yeah.
Do we know that yet?
Yes. Oh, we know more about that, I believe, than we know about the gut microbiome. And so that is essentially all of your central nervous system. Everything that you know about your central nervous system that happens there is exactly what takes place at the end of your HPA axis. So we've known that for many, many years now at this point, but it's the different signals that your body sends to the different receptors, and they fire off different areas of your brain. And that is how your brain activity functions and how you think and you enjoy, you know, activities and learn. So all of that is your gut integrated right into that system.
But so overall, you want to make sure your gut is sending the right messages.
The right messages, okay. Yes.
So that's good. So another thing that I really want to find a bit more, this fecal microbiota, yes, transplantations. It sounds disgusting, but clearly not.
Yeah.
Is it safe? And is that the most effective way to figure this situation out?
Yeah. So safety and efficacy are always, always at top of mind when we're doing things like this or when we read about research like this. And so far in Canada, that is the only thing that it is approved for and as an investigational therapeutic in those circumstances. But there have been some clinical trials that look at using FMT to treat other disorders such as bipolar disorder, uh-huh, and depressive disorder. The process is, I suppose, more or less standardized in itself, okay, where the procedure is to take stool from a healthy donor, process it, filter it, ensure that you are testing it for any known pathogenic bacteria, mm-hmm, and then essentially is transferring it into the recipient. And so that whole process, everything that can be sterile is sterile, and the patients are monitored for quite a while afterwards to ensure that there's no bacterial infection.
Yeah.
So to be able to use FMT as the therapy is, I think, strictly controlled. And I think that is a good way to go about it for now until we figure out a less broad way of addressing it. And so I think that's where the live biotherapeutics come in, where, you know, we've seen a set of bacteria that have done things that we think are going to be very beneficial to an individual. And that is a much cleaner way of transplanting that microbiome,
right,
to the recipient. So,
but like everything, there's a lot of things you need to do beforehand to be able to get to that point. Which is not easy. So this whole project, it can't be easy anyway, because it must take a long time, and clearly you're going to give yourself another 4 years along with your lab mates and yeah, things. But it's difficult, isn't it? Because here you are a researcher and you so want to be able to tell people about what you're doing, but you have to be a bit careful too that you don't say too much too early, whether you know got an industry partner or even a granting agency, and you know, you can't say much until, you can't even publish until you really got better data that you can stand behind. How do you find that as a researcher, where you're a bit restricted when someone comes and says, what do you do? Well, yeah, I can only tell you this much because, yeah, I can't tell you that right now.
Yeah. So I have never experienced anything like this, I'll be honest. And I sort of feel like I work as like an undercover spy when I work with these.
I love it. Like,
what do you do? Well, I work with the gut microbiome, the gut microbiota, and I look at, you know, what bacteria are there and what are they doing down there. And that's almost as much as I can really say without getting into the nitty gritty of it. And so I feel like when I talk about my work, sometimes it's like I'm an undercover spy where I can't say anything and I have to keep it a little bit secret. But the general idea is, you know, there's a lot going on in our gut microbiome that is playing a huge role in so many of our daily activities. And, you know, that is the next step of figuring out how we can modulate it and what aspects would it affect our bodies afterwards.
So you haven't said anything today that you're not allowed to say?
No, I believe not. So we're in the clear.
We're in the clear. I love it. Otherwise, because I certainly don't want to get you into any trouble along the way.
Yeah, I've had some good practice with, you know, writing up my thesis, doing the 3MT, of course, and speaking at a poster presentation. So I'm a little bit more familiar with, you know, things I can and can't talk about. So.
That's good, because it is important for you to understand that. April, that has been fascinating. Okay, I've learned a lot more about my guts than I really want to. But...
yeah. My whole family, the only thing they know about my research is that I work with stool samples. So,
oh, that's exciting for them to tell their, you know, the uncles and aunts and cousins and friends, isn't it?
Exactly.
You're gonna have to find some joke of saying about all of that. But, you know, I do wish you the best in your work. I know how much you did here, and it was great to hear you both in the 3MT and again today. And I wish you all the best with this project.
Thank you so much, Helen.
You're gonna help us find out so much, which I'm sure will help a lot of people down the track. Even though we know it's not going to happen in a couple of months' time. It is going to take time to do it. So, good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully, you can stay in touch.
Yeah,
let us know how you're going.
Of course. Thank you so much, Colette, for inviting me onto your show. And I am so happy to be able to share my research. And if there are any graduate students out there listening, one piece of parting advice that was given to me early on in my master's that I'd like to share is, you know, as tumultuous as a degree can be, as your graduate degree can be, you are your own steerer of your boat. Yeah. You can be in the same lake or same river in the same storm as others, but you are guiding your own boat. You are the only individual who can guide your own boat. And I think that really resonated me throughout my entire degree. And now I'm always thinking about how I can steer my own ship, you know? So
brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Colette.
Very well said. That is very well said, because you're right. We're all in charge of our own destiny. And so it's what we want to make of it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Good ending thoughts for everybody. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.